Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
Hi, today on the Josh Bolton Show, we have Angelo Panzi, a marketing businessman, entrepreneur, and just awesome guy from California. Here he is, Angelo.
Hi, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Angelo. We were talking before I hit the record that you are stationed in California and you're in the marketing. Can you give me a little bit about that?
Sure. So I'm what they call a fractional chief marketing officer, which means that I'm a senior level marketer, but as a fractional person, somebody buys a fraction of my time. Could be 8 hours, could be a day a week, could be 2 days a week. So it really, really kind of depends. And
interesting.
Yeah. So I'll go in and we call ourselves marketing architects. So we're building blueprints for growth. We focus more on the strategic and analytical side of marketing. And so from that standpoint, we work with a lot of market research. So we're digging out information on the customers and the prospects and the competition and utilizing that information and helping develop our positioning and messaging strategies and our growth strategies. And that's what I focus on. And then when it comes time to execute those plans, we turn into general contractors, right? Because we manage different teams to make sure the plans are being built. I mean, you wouldn't build a house without a blueprint. And that's what we look at, is you wouldn't build your business without having the foundation and the blueprint to know where you're going.
Right. Yeah. Building a house, you have to have a plan in every step done, because at one point in my life, I was doing construction and the boss had no plan. I'm like, well, what are we going to do then? Do you want us to just put two pieces of wood together and charge them $1,000?
Yeah. Well, you know that. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. It's really digging down and understanding, you know, when you're mapping out that blueprint, where the issues might be, and understanding where the challenges, and whether it's materials, whatever it happens to be, understanding the competition. You know, you're going to build a house, you build a multi-million dollar house in the wrong area, you know, therefore the value is going to go down, whatever it happens to be, right? So you're really looking at those kinds of strategic questions and issues before you get to the tactical stuff.
So as far as planning and strategics for the marketing and online, what are some of the trends you see recently, especially with the 2020 lockdowns, that maybe would have taken more 5 to 10 years?
Certainly. You know, the term that we hear a lot, of course, is digital transformation. And as more and more companies were becoming more digitally focused in what they do, that the pandemic actually expedited that. The CEO of Microsoft was quoted saying, I won't get this totally right, but we've had, you know, 5 years of digital transformation in 3 months.
Yeah.
Because we had all these remote workers now. And if companies weren't prepared for it, they had to make adaptations. And now here we are, you know, a year later, and people are used to working remote. As a lot of the studies are showing, that people are much more efficient and much more effective because they don't have to get in the car. I mean, you're in Southern California with me.
You're right.
We're here, and it took us literally 30 seconds or less to get on this call. But if we were meeting in person, I would have had to time this out to be there at 10 o'clock. I probably would have left at, you know, 6:30 in the morning.
Seriously?
Just to be there by 10. Right. So, I mean, look how efficient this is. And so people can be much more productive. Does that eliminate face-to-face? Absolutely not. We're seeing that now. People are trying to have more, you know, lunch meetings and coffee meetings and, you know, getting together, certainly being safe about it.
Right.
To build that, keep that, and build those relationships. But I can see you once a month and talk 20 times to you on Zoom, and we can be effective.
Yeah, the once a month, just to know, like, that human interaction. We're still very simple, smart, but simple beasts, and we just want that social interaction.
Well, it's true, too, because, you know, when you're sitting across the table from somebody, you can look in their eyes, you can see their, you know, really clearly see their facial expressions or their hand movements. I mean, you know, we're looking at each other on Zoom here, and right now, both our hands are below the table, below the cutoff line, right? I have no idea. You know, you could be doing anything. I saw a guy the other day that, it was funny, he was just like we are. But all of a sudden I see this cat tail just doing this back and forth on the screen. He obviously had a cat on his desk and the cat was wandering and his tail was just in the screen. It was hysterical. So that kind of, distractions, if you will, that come with Zoom, you're not going to get that when you're having in-person stuff, because again, I'm Italian. I talk with my hands. I'm holding my hands down because I know it can get distracting and I start doing this kind of stuff.
I grew up in an Italian family. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, we talk with our hands, right? How do you get an Italian to stop talking? Tie his hands behind his back.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It was so funny when my grandfather, as he's talking and he's passionate and he's waving his hands and it's like, what are you trying to like conduct an opera? He's like, my hands speak more than my words.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. You had to be careful. They get a bunch of Italians in a room. You could get knocked out as a young kid.
Yes. Yes, indeed. That was one of those, when I see like the aunts and grandparents get together, it's like, I'm going over here. They're going to freaking beat each other.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes you wonder, are they mad at each other? No, they're just talking.
Yes. So we were mentioning the online trends and remote and meeting in person. But one thing I noticed, I mean, I've wanted to do this podcast for years. I just got scared because of cancel culture. But it was one of those, I realized everything now is going online. The marketing, the ads, it's like, if I don't start it now, it's like, it's too late. So from your marketing perspective for podcasting and even YouTube, because they're like the pillars now of content, what is your perspective? If it's now like, it doesn't even matter the niche, you should just always make one, or is there something different you see?
Well, it's interesting. There's a strategic aspect to podcasting. So I'm a podcaster. Oh. I have a show called the Business Growth Cafe, and I'm into my third year.
Nice.
And when I started it, there was only about 750,000 podcasts. Sounds like a lot, but
no, God, no.
Considering now there's a couple million. So I chose business because I'm in business, and I chose to be an advice show. So not strictly about marketing, but about business advice. So the people that I talk to could be presidents and CEOs of companies. They could be people like myself that are providing services. Could be, book editors, somebody who authored a book. So a wide variety. Ultimately, it's about offering business advice. But when I looked at it, I started thinking about the type of show. So I guested on a few. I saw what other people were doing. I got some stats because I'm a research guy. So I looked at some of the stats that are provided. And when you start to break down even the 2 million, you start to break that down, there's niches. And right. And I saw that the business segment was about 13%. I'm quoting the numbers from before. I'm not sure exactly what it is now. It's about 13%. But you can also drill down into business, and you can look at uncategorized, you can look at entrepreneurship, management, marketing. And in there, the question became, do I try to dominate a very specific niche? Do I broaden it out? Who's the competition in a sense within those, and how do you build? So podcasting is a great form of, it's one of the few, I'll call it, forms of communication that's actually getting longer, where most of it's about getting shorter, right? Quick hits, your Instagram, your Twitter, those are, short bursts of communications. Even blogs have gotten shorter. You write a 2000 word blog, it's really an article. They tell you keep blogs 300, 500 words or less. Yet podcasting, we'll talk for an hour. And that generates ton of content. People are listening to it. I just saw a stat actually, that, and I won't get this totally right because I didn't totally read the article, but it was something along the lines of, there are more people listening to podcasts than they are listening to music on Spotify and Pandora.
I have to agree with that. A lot of my coworkers at the current job I'm at, there are a few that still listen to music just to get them through the night, but most of them are just listening to podcasts. They're like, it's nice. It feels like I'm listening to a conversation with my friends kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, so there's great content, and depending on the shows that you listen to, you can get a wide variety of inputs. And so I think, you know, podcasting, and I commend you for stepping in and doing it. I mean, it is, obviously I'm doing it over 3 years now. So I mean, it's a passion. I don't make any money from it. I wish I did, but I don't. Yeah. But it's a passion. It's a way to give back and to, you know, have a voice. I mean, I've been able to give voices kind of outside of my lane to things like health and welfare in the workplace, you know, suicide prevention, human trafficking. You know, I've done other things that I was able to give a voice to people that they might not have had if it wasn't for, you know, my show or shows like yours.
Right. Yeah. It's there, how I approach it. There's like 7 billion of us on this earth. So that's 7 billion different stories kind of thing. Some are similar, some are not, but it's like, we all need to eventually just tell the story kind of thing. And it's important. It just helps us in general learn and realize, oh, by holding the pen this way, it's bad. But if I hold it this way, it's good kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, certainly, you know, it is an education, and it sounds like you're finding out, as I certainly have, is we're always learning. If we're not learning, you know, we're not learning, we're dying kind of thing.
Something like,
So there's always an education, not only for the audiences, but for people that are doing the interviewing, because I don't know everything. And so I hear stories, I hear people tell things. A lot of times it sparks ideas for me. And, mm-hmm. and so, you know, it gives me a reason to go listen to something else or read something else that maybe I can bring into my clients. Sorry about that.
It's all good.
I hit the space bar. And so, yeah, I think podcasting has blown up. There's newsletters now and magazines and trade shows. I mean, it's big business. I mean, people are buying companies. I mean, there's somebody just Spotify just bought one of the aggregators, I guess, you know, for multi-millions of dollars. I mean, it's
Joe Rogan, or is it Anchor?
I think it was Anchor.
Because they did Anchor and Megaphone.
Yeah. So they, you know, so all of a sudden there's a lot of acquisitions going on.
Right.
So, I mean, this is big business, and podcasting dollars and ad revenue is skyrocketing.
It really is.
We got to get in on that.
Yeah. Yes. It's not too late for us. Yeah. That's one thing I was reading in the stats somewhere where it's like, for podcasters who, like, let's say I paid for a commercial for your show, there will be 7% listeners, but within that 70%, 30% will actually take an action and do something with the commercial. And I'm just sitting here going, that's an insane return on investment. Like, you know, 30% of whatever that audience is going to actually buy your product. Mm-hmm. You only need like 2-3 purchases from your one ad kind of thing, if it's $1,000.
Yeah. I mean, it's art and science and any kind of media buying and placement, those kinds of things. So it's understanding the audience. And I, you know, for myself, I actually run my own commercials. I'm not selling a product, but more about education about what I do. But right. I do have some products that I'm working on, and I'm going to start trying that as well. And then I've gone on to a couple ad networks and started to populate in there to see if I can get, you know, some people interested in running on my show, because it is about consistency, right? They look to, you know, not only downloads and listeners, but, you know, how long you've been around and consistency. I mean, if you do one today, you don't do another one for 6 months, you could have 1 million downloads, but you're too inconsistent. They can't count on it.
Right. They want to measure, let's say you post one once a week, they're going to be like, oh, every week, like religion, like Angela's going to post something. So like, yes, then we'll take you kind of thing.
Yep. Yep.
So for you, I want to get into more of the online and social media and maybe some of the culture clash a little, if you want to get into that part. For one thing I've noticed as I've been doing the show, and I've only done this like 3 months now, is like the SEO and websites requirements to get into the game correctly. What are some of the things you see for your clients as they're building up their stuff that maybe they didn't even realize they had to do it?
Well, I think that, any company that's resisting, you know, getting online, if you will, and some kind of digital transformation, I think they're missing the boat. Mm-hmm. But there's a study out, a McKinsey study, that showed the amount of research being done by a potential customer online. So, but 2016 to 2019, there was an 85% increase in the amount of research that was being done online prior to ever picking up the phone to or placing an order, right? So before I'm going to call somebody or I'm going to buy their product, I'm doing research on my own. So if you don't have a presence and you're not providing the right kind of content to educate somebody to take that next step, you're already out of the game. You're already behind everybody else. If you're just relying on, you know, smiling, dialing, and whatever, you know, your method of sales happens to be. So having that digital presence and understanding your customer and moving them down, you know, their journey and moving them down the funnel is extremely important. But one of the other changes that's happened during this COVID and this pandemic last year is the handoff between marketing and sales actually pushed farther down into the funnel. So now, before it used to be, you know, awareness, interest, and then you'd kind of hand it off when there was consideration to the sales department. But marketing actually has pushed much farther down into that consideration set, because during that same time period, there was a 239% increase of the engagement. People are actually online looking to engage. So more demos, you know, taking it much further where they were getting the education and being, you know, that something that an on-person or an in-person demo might look like, now they're looking for it online before they start to communicate. So there was a dynamic change in the roles of marketing and sales. So once again, you know, if you're not there, you're missing these opportunities, because there's a lot of work being done before somebody picks up the phone. So if you're not in that and you haven't offered up the content, so it's all about content. And it's all about placement of content and making sure you're telling a variety of stories, because you don't know where somebody is necessarily in the journey, right? If they're beginning to look, you know, in that awareness phase, looking. But if they've already looked and they're already aware and you're not serving up content to move them down, again, the company is at a disadvantage.
And that's the biggest thing I've been noticing. I had another fellow business marketing guy come on, and that's literally the same thing he said. He's like, just make it. He's like, take it like Gary Vee, make multiple things. He's like, the only time you should really barf your content everywhere, because you don't know, maybe someone's 5 years behind on content and you just don't know it, but it'll click in like 2 months because they finally got around to it.
Yeah. He's I'm sorry.
No, you go.
Well, I was going to say, somebody today was telling me in a meeting that, yeah, every Thursday we have a post on LinkedIn. Okay. And to me, that's great. But you need to be doing multiple posts on LinkedIn, whether it's daily or three times a week, right? Because if I posted right now while we're talking, by the time we get off this podcast, that post is down the feed. You might have gotten 50 or 100 other things. And how far are you going to scroll down to get my particular post, right? So, So even if you look at some of the recommendations, I mean, there's recommendations you post three times a day on LinkedIn, just so you're constantly in the feed, right? And then you also should tag people or tag other people. So I get, there's this guy that has been on my show and he follows me. He'll actually pose a question and then tag about 15 or 20 people. And all of a sudden you get a lot of activity, because now all these people are answering his question. And as soon as, you know, I answer that question, it goes out to my feed. And so you have to be very strategic, because, you know, we're not the only people doing it. We're not the only people doing video. We're not the only people doing podcasting. And how do you, you know, have to be that, you know, kind of omni-channel approach? How can you be present at all places? Because you don't know when someone's going to decide today's the day.
No, and you don't. And that's where then you need like someone like a team like you for the marketing architects, where you can figure out for... I'm assuming your clients are more higher end. Like,
nope.
Really?
Yeah. So they're all over the place. And I do work with higher end clients, but I work with a lot of startups as well, because they either in that early stage and they're looking to focus and have clarity in their messaging and who they are, or maybe they're still looking to for their MVP and they don't know they're building it. So I'm working with a software company right now that I started working with them last August. They didn't beta until January. And we just launched a project, a product just like 3 weeks ago. And so, you know, they're a small company with you know, limited revenue, but we were able to work together to help them take it, you know, to the next level and to get more focused and be more strategic in their rollout, you know, not just throw it out there tomorrow and then not be able to launch the product, which was my advice. Don't start telling people to go sign up for it when you were not going to have it for 4 or 5 months.
Right.
And so I work with startups. I work with small to medium sized businesses. Probably I like to say maybe 2 million, 3 million to 75 million, depending on the company itself, whether it's a B2B or B2C. Mm-hmm.
So then one thing I've been hearing consistently from everyone is the need for email list, even though it's archaic, it's still the most effective for targeting marketing people. Are they correct, or is there nuances with emailing now that you see different?
Well, you know, the prediction that email is dead is not true. Just like years ago, they used to say, you know, network television was dead and TV commercials were dead. And, you know, let's turn on the channel, right? So it's email marketing is actually still one of the most effective mediums. Okay. But again, maybe not on its own, but with a combination of, again, back to this omni-channel approach. So your list is essential, and everything that we do should be to continually generate lists. Buying lists, you know, that's a, you don't know what you're really getting. So you want to grow it organically. That's why on people's websites, they, you know, offering newsletters or, you know, sign up here to get your free ebook or, you know, I'll get a lot of these, whether it's on Facebook, a lot of times when I'm looking around, I'll see something that piques my interest, but I got to give up my email and some content about me in order to get that download. So right. I see that being used more and more. It's a great tool because, again, you just don't know when someone is going to be interested in what's going on. So you're trying to get them to give up that information so you can market to them later on. And then back to consistency. Now, there's a guy, for example, that I just met about 3 weeks ago. He put me on his mailing list, which I was fine with, but he emails every day.
Ooh.
To now to the point where I've just blocked him. Right. So there's a cadence to it, right? It's back to understanding your customers. If you're just constantly selling, you're going to get blocked. So what value can you give to your potential customers that make them want to download or make them want to click or to go watch that video? There's tons of tools that are available to do lots of different things. But why are they going to do it? If I sent you an email every day and said, use my services, use my services, use my services, you're going to turn me off.
Yeah, it's annoying. It's like, well, okay, maybe you are good, but now that you've like literally bugged the shit out of me, I don't respect you anymore. Get out, kind of thing.
Well, that's exactly right. And so there is a cadence to it. And again, that gets back to understanding your customer. That's a mantra of mine for years, is know your customer, because you have to understand how they consume information, right? If you're talking to somebody that might be slightly older, they might still want a piece of paper in their hands, a white paper. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking to somebody that's in their 20s. Hey, you're going to watch a video. So knowing your customer, knowing how they consume information, understanding what's important to them, what value proposition, that how you're going to benefit their lives. Not just if I told you that I have all these great marketing tools, I'm a great marketer. You're going to go, okay, he's a great marketer. But if I said, I know your pains, I can help you achieve what you need to achieve, and so you get a better job, you raise your capital within your organization, whatever it happens to be, that's of more interest because it's something that's going to benefit you and your organization that I can deliver versus me just telling you about how great I am.
Yeah, you can talk all you want, but if you can actually produce an action, that means way more. I agree. There was, I was listening to a podcast back in the day about dieting, and the guy essentially said, he's like, yeah, he's like, it's work. But he's like, 140 characters less. If you tweet me, I'll just send you the answer, kind of thing. And he corrected a lot of my stuff. And I would always go to his link if I was going to Amazon, just buy through his affiliate link to help him out.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, again, he built a relationship, had emotional connection with you. That's a much stronger relationship than a rational one. You know you need marketing, but if I have an emotional connection with you and we've built that trust over time and I've given you things that gave you value, you're more likely to contact me when the time comes.
Right. Yeah, you would be the first on someone's mind, even if they haven't thought about that topic in ages. It's like, oh, it's like Angelo, like he'll freaking help you with everything kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I want to get into, we've already touched on a few of the topics. So it's the more the cultural perspective of social media and marketing, the using the controversies to grab attention. Is this a trend, let's say a young business that wants to get their name known should do, or is it more with how triggering everything is, they shouldn't consider that?
Well, you know, I think about when in making that statement, I think about fear-based marketing. And there's a lot of studies out there that say that it's not good to really be negative like that. But I think you're looking for something that grabs people's attention. And so again, I think from that standpoint, it really depends on the product or the service or what you're trying to do. So if it happens to be in kind of an environmental issue, you can talk about kind of the negative side of if you don't take action. I agree with a lot of that. You could sit there and say, you know, take a shoe company and talk about increased performance, right? The value proposition of that. And if you don't use our shoe, maybe you won't be as high performance. Mm-hmm. So I think there's always caution to that and how you position yourself and in making sure, especially if you're tying yourself into a charity or a, you know, some kind of a nonprofit, kind of that give back, that it's, what's the word I'm looking for? It's believable. It's real. Yeah. And not, if you ever come across as it's just BS or just, you know, you're using it to draw attention, you know, that kind of stuff will really backfire on you. And it takes commitment. I have a friend of mine who gives, I think it's 10% of her quarterly profits to charity. And she, oh, wow. And she's been doing it constantly. And so she leverages that and her actions. She goes out of her way to work with organizations that need support and help. And then mm-hmm. she follows through with donations. So, I mean, that's part of her entire business. Matter of fact, her business is about being a change agent for the world. And so she delivers on that brand promise. But I think if other people are just leveraging it as a way to get in the door and that's not really truthful, or they can't commit or really deliver on it, I think it can backfire.
And it also comes back to the reputation problem. If you build a reputation of this sleazy guy that just wants your money and your email and when it blows up your email, it puts a foul taste in the mouth. And you're like, I don't know anymore if I could even recommend someone this. If anything, I'm going to tell them, like, don't even consider this website kind of thing.
Right. And it is about reputation, right? Ultimately, it boils down to the reputation. And it takes a long time to build a brand, whether it's your personal brand or a product or a service. And in today's world, it instantaneously can be destroyed. Yes. Right? It doesn't take long for something to backfire. So you're always having to be nurturing that brand and making sure that the things you're doing and you're saying and following through, that there's a commitment in the integrity. I was telling a story to a guest I had on my podcast yesterday, and I was telling her about, you know, a client and how they were very disruptive in my agency when I had my advertising agency. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up firing the client because they treated the people poorly and they were very disruptive in the workflow. And while they were paying a lot of money in fees, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I had a whole lot of people that were unhappy and, you know, refused to work on the account. And when I told her that story, her response was, "You've just confirmed to me that your integrity, because I believed you had that, was we're getting to know each other. But you're telling me stories that are constantly reinforcing who you are as a human being, the kind of person I want to do business with." So, I mean, I think there's different aspects of that brand reputation that you need to define and nurture along in what you're doing for anybody.
Yeah, it is. And it's like I think it's Warren Buffett or one of them where it's like, it takes 20 years to build a reputation and only takes 1 minute to ruin it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Again, especially, you know, in days past when social media and, you know, didn't exist, it right. could be a long time or never, You know, just look at the papers going on, you know, today and talking about some of the politicians and some of the stuff they're getting caught doing. You know, 20 years ago or 25 years ago, whatever it is now, nobody would have ever known any of that stuff. Maybe in their small community, and maybe it would have gone in some of the local papers, maybe even a national paper, but certainly wouldn't have got the coverage that it's getting in its constant flow, right? So it's really important that you know, reputation management becomes extremely important in today's world.
And it is. It's the few things I've noticed with just how everything's shifting online. It almost takes a team just to manage your business alone on just social media and reputational kind of thing. And that's where, like, guys like you, it's like, can you give me a blueprint, an architect of whatever I should do? And then I can go figure out where I need to outsource from there.
Yeah. I mean, it is a plan. It ultimately is a plan that people need to follow. And the inconsistency, I tell clients all the time, talking one the other day, and they said, yeah, we want to continue to blog. And so I went on their site and I said, well, the last time you blogged was 6 months ago. So you're not continuing to blog at all. As a matter of fact, it looks like you either too busy, don't care, don't have enough to say. So you're too inconsistent. I say, take it down until we can build up an inventory so we can have a regular cadence. And I tell people that all the time. Don't try to be on every channel if you can't actually execute on every channel. Why? Because if they go to it and you tell me, put a YouTube link in your website and I click on it and the last video you posted was 6 years ago, that doesn't do you any good. Matter of fact, I think it does you more harm.
Yeah, because it's the, okay, well, 6 years ago, maybe they were a different person back then than they are now. Or it's like, is this content relevant? Is their business relevant kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. So I say use fewer channels, be consistent, and then you can add more channels later on once you get it going. And depending on the business, you know, a lot of times it'll be, you know, we've given the social media activity to, you know, the person at the front desk. Well, you know, that isn't necessarily always the right way to go. But if there's a plan and a cadence and this person is following through, then yeah, it works great. There's always somebody, and there's always virtual assistants. There's always, you know, people that can help execute. And I say, don't try to do everything that you don't necessarily need to do, but make sure that there's consistency. There's people to help. Because again, doing it once or twice and not doing it is useless.
Yeah, you're better off doing less content maybe once a week, but consistent than every day. And then it's just slowly the quality disappears because you're doing it every day.
Yeah.
So then I want to get into kind of like your up and coming story, why you chose marketing in your path getting to this point.
Well, you know, part of it was school. I like the always have the strategic side, you know, the kind of the visionary and thinking things through. I mean, throughout my career, I was always that person doing the research, the writing, the plans. I understand creativity. I do creativity, but I can't draw to save my life. I was never that person that was creating the visuals for the ads or anything like that. A lot of tools out there now. I've actually gotten pretty good at it, but that was not the part of marketing that I really liked. I like digging into the data. I like understanding, you know, what the nuances are within an organization. A client I worked on a couple of years ago, we were able to dig into the data to the point where we knew that if a customer bought today, they weren't going to buy again for 3 years. That was a historical pattern for 30 years. So spending tons of time beating that guy's door down in year two didn't make any sense. You wanted to be more of a value add, more of a consultant approach to let them know you were there. They can maybe add some ancillary products, but you shouldn't be putting forth an entire, you know, full court press on these guys because they were never going to buy. So just that shift in understanding strategically how to approach sales freed up the salespeople to actually chase new business and do other things. To me, that's marketing, right? People tend to want to say, I'll get a phone call and says, you know, I need a marketing guy. So that's great. What do you need? Well, we need a new website and social media. Well, that's the tactics. That's the end result. That's how we take it to communication. So So that has always been a focus of mine. As a matter of fact, whether it was the agencies I worked for, I've had my own marketing agencies. I've been on the client side from international product manager up to CMO and chief strategy officer. I also have had two research companies. I actually have one right now called Strategic Market Intelligence, which is the research arm of this organization. Okay. I also was in the action sports industry for 13 years with a research company called BoardTrack, which focused on surfing, skating, and snowboarding. And so that actually, I did research for Pacific Sunwear for about 9 years as a client. And then after hearing guys like Bob McKnight of Quicksilver and Bob Hurley of Hurley say, man, we wish there was more research in this industry, I decided to launch a research company. And you know, over the 13-year period, it became, you know, the place everybody turned to for data and strategic consulting.
Yeah, especially like we can all find whatever data on Google, but it's not the refined. If you can say I've done research in specifically surfing, that they'll be like, oh, well, it's nice that that's free, but I'll pay him the extra premium because it's specific to me kind of thing.
Right. So that's where proprietary research comes in. I mean, if I'm doing a study for you and you're the only person, right? So that to me, that's where a lot of the great insights come in. Mm-hmm. There's secondary research, which is information that exists, right? We go on Google, we start doing search on podcasting, and we gather all this great data and we can refine it and use it to our advantage in our conversations. But we didn't create it. So we don't ultimately know the methodologies behind it. And so I tell people, when you're using secondary research and data out of an article to support a position, you've got to dig a little deeper to understand where it came from. Right. If I tell you McKinsey, you know, McKinsey is a reputable global research company. Mm-hmm. But if I start referencing Bob's really good research, well, we don't know Bob. And, you know, I don't know what's his background. I got to know their methodologies. A lot of times I'll read an article and they're quoting all these stats, and I'll look down and I'll see it was a qualitative study and they talked to 10 people. Mm-hmm. Right. So secondary research can be is fantastic, and there's a lot of data out there, you know, from an unstructured standpoint, it's just out there and you can utilize that. Then there's a lot of syndicated studies, actually, with that BoardTrack I was talking to you about in the action sports. We were primarily a syndicated research study, which meant that I produced it, I owned it, and I packaged it and sold it. So you all got the same material. So if I sold it, you know, one to you, you got the same thing I sold to Quicksilver, or I sold to Hurley, or I sold to DC Shoes. Now I could go back and customize and rerun the data to make it a proprietary because I own the data. And then there's the proprietary research where the data is yours, right? Nobody else has it. So, you know, so there's different ways to look at research and you know, how you utilize it and developing your position, and whether it's for business or anything else.
Indeed. And especially with all the different tracking nowadays, as eerie as it is for marketers, it's the best insights ever. No.
Yeah. Well, again, to your point, it's, you know, all the analytics, whether you're just running Google or you're doing some other kind of analytics on your website. I look at mine all the time to figure out where people are going. I'm in the process of rebranding right now. And I'm looking at and as I'm redoing my website, I'm thinking, okay, does anybody ever go to this content page? You know, is it important to have, and maybe it's my fault, maybe there's not enough SEO heading that way or whatever it happens to be. But, you know, I'm getting those insights. I can set triggers up, which I do, like, for example, on my podcast. Even though I have a podcast website, I also have it on my personal, my business website, and I have a conversion on there. So if I see people coming in and know that they're going to that page, I know that some of my marketing is working. Not necessarily, again, making me money in the conversion, but I know they're doing it. And then there's just a lot of other data, I mean, that's out there. There's a company I was working with a few years ago, and there was about footfall analysis. So they're literally tracking people's movements that they could go into, you know, XYZ store and say, hey, Angelo Ponzi, you know, not being very specific, but Angelo Ponzi, this guy walked, these people are walking by your store every day. So let's launch a digital campaign that when they get close, we'll ping them with an ad to tell them to go in and buy a cup of coffee. So, I mean, you can get really sophisticated, and I think you made the comment, it's actually really scary in some of the data. And now with some of the changes, I mean, as soon as you get a website and you hit the cookie thing, the next thing you know, people are giving you phone calls and sending you emails, and you never actually asked for anything.
I know. It drives me crazy. I have, luckily, Google Smart and has built a list now, but I was getting like 5-6 calls. I just went to an HTTPS, some like whatever, and I just clicked because it wouldn't let me in. And then literally a robocall right after. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. So it's very intrusive these days. And so it's hard. And you know, and then, you know, with the retargeting and all the stuff that goes on. So, I mean, you're just constantly, I clicked on a coat ad, I don't know, about 4 months ago. That was an interesting looking coat. That company's retargeting ads pop up on everywhere I go. It's really, really annoying at this point in time. And then, so, I mean, there's so many different ways. Back to the conversation we've been having. Why? Because so many more people, especially because of the lockdown and the digital transformation, are doing their work online, doing their searching, buying their groceries. I mean, you know, the online ordering for food and those kinds of things has increased, and a lot of it won't go back. You know, a lot of what we've transformed to because of the pandemic, the pendulum won't swing all the way in the other direction. If it does, it's going to be, in my opinion, brief, and then it's going to come back, because heck, I can go on Amazon and order everything I need. I don't even have to leave the house. So
we all know we're paying like $2-3 extra, but it's like, I don't have to leave. I'll give you the extra $2-3 right now.
Yeah. Considering the price of gas here in California, we might save ourselves money.
Oh my gosh. That's so annoying. The price, it's like, we're already $1.50 above everyone. And then it's almost gone up another dollar. It's like touching that $4.50, I think, last I checked my area.
Yeah. The plus side of the pandemic is that my tanks of gas are lasting a lot longer than, but I get fearful every time I think about going to the gas station. I was hearing people talk about it, and somebody was saying that there was it Texas or someplace in the Midwest, they're paying like, you know, $2.35 or whatever. And we're getting close to 4.5.
Yeah. And well, especially with the Texas freeze out, just natural gas in general, we're going to feel that all throughout America, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, it's just Texas. It's like, if you actually know how the market works, it'll be there for this like month or quarter, but it's going to slowly come to our side too.
Well, think about it. I mean, here in California, you know, oil price might go up, or a refinery, you know, the refinery there in Torrance has an issue and gas prices skyrocket. Oh, wait a minute. The supply and the manufacturing and the production of it is not that quick, right? The supply chain is not that fast, but there's just an excuse to jack up our prices. And so I'm always fearful if a rig gets shut down or something happens, or the refineries have an issue, we feel that immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the companies, they probably, how like ExxonMobil and Chevron work, they already know like 2 months before we even know that this is happening. I've adjusted accordingly, but we don't feel it until the price goes from $2 to $3.50. And we're like, what the hell just happened, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then we have a lot of taxes on our gas out here as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the only thing they haven't taxed, but I'm sure someone will figure out, is clean air.
Yeah.
Other than that, they tax us on everything.
I think they're taxing us on taxes.
I think so, honestly. The way they do it, it's like, what? Because I paid this tax, you have to tax me for the tax. Then there's a tax for the tax. It's like, I need an accountant. I don't understand this. So actually, I love it right there. I got a couple of closing questions for you.
Sure.
What has been different for you for these 2020 lockdowns? What have you been doing to keep busy, like Netflix, Amazon, podcasting, et cetera?
Yeah, you know, so as a fractional, I actually have been working out of a home office. I've been working out of that for 7 years now.
Okay.
So the pandemic didn't affect me that way. What the impact was that I just couldn't go anywhere because I also did a lot of meetings off campus and a lot of lunches and breakfasts and things like that. So that was kind of the quick impact on me. Marketing is a lot of times looked at as an expense versus an investment. So in the, you know, the March, the April, May, a lot of clients and a lot of companies cut their marketing budget. So that certainly had an impact, which actually got me writing a lot. So I did a lot of articles and webinars and seminars on why they shouldn't be cutting their budgets and they should be investing. And I did a lot of proof points for that.
Mm-hmm.
My Netflix consumption certainly did go up and so did, you know, the purchase of Disney and a few others. So, so from that standpoint, that was the escape, right? I mean, it's the, you know, going to the grocery store and, you know, TV, I mean, that was it. And, you know, listening to podcasts and, you know, reading more books and things like that. Before I used to, when I was drive a lot, I'd get audiobooks.
Okay.
Well, I wasn't driving, so I stopped listening to audiobooks. And so, you know, podcasts have kind of replaced that. I do miss audiobooks, but I've been downloading actually more digital books now because I'm sitting at my desk a lot. And so a lot of times my breaks will be just, you know, to go read some more of a digital book.
Do you prefer the digital book or do you still like the paper one? It just,
you know, I fought it for a long time and I find that, I do go digital now. It's just easier because I can just carry it around with me and not have to worry about it. I still buy paper though. I would say out of every 10 books, I'm maybe three are still paper, like, depending on what it is.
Like for me, this book I've been reading slowly, but he doesn't even have a digital, or if he does, it is more expensive. It's just mindset and how people use their creativity. And it's just one of those I couldn't find online. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go into the store and just buy one kind of thing.
You actually went into the store.
Yeah.
You found a bookstore.
That still functions too. Barnes and Noble. It's strange.
Yeah. It's we have one down here that I probably was a couple of years ago. I was in it, but you know, again, whether it's laziness or just the ease of use. I mean, it's, you know, most of the books I buy that are paper are off of Amazon. It's just, again, just quicker. Somebody was talking about, I was in a meeting and somebody was talking about their book and I went in and bought the digital book because I really liked what he was saying. And then at the end he said, and if you send me an email, I'll send you a free book. I was like, holy crap.
It's like, damn it. Can I get a refund then?
Yeah. But, I find it just easier to hit the digital. And before, you know, I read a lot of mysteries and those kinds of things. But, you know, reading for pleasure actually hasn't been as frequent as reading for business and, you know, just being a geek about it.
Yes. Then final question. Before we get your stuff up and running, what is some tips and tricks for young entrepreneurs wanting to get into the marketing industry? Mindsets and maybe skills that are not as taught or thought about kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, certainly depending on where they're at, whether they're in school or certainly out of school and depending on the degree that they have. I mean, honestly, internships, you know, again, depending where they are in their career, I highly recommend the value of an internship and getting an opportunity to learn different skill sets and see how it actually works in a real world. I mean, that's the difference of school and in the real world, right? You can be taught a lot of things and you get into the first, you know, work situation and it works nothing like it did in school.
Yes.
And so internships actually add a lot of value. It's also a good entry point into a potential career and a job. And then, you know, ultimately looking at what is that lane, you know, a lot of, you know, millennials and Gen Z now are coming and they're focusing on kind of that digital world because that's what's changing. And so there's lots of career opportunities, whether you go on corporate side or agency side.
Mm-hmm.
I like the agency side initially. And the reason why is because you're dealing with lots of clients. And so you're getting a much broader exposure to different industries versus if you go take a job at a corporation, I mean, that's the corporation. That's all you're going to focus on. So you know, my path was that path to get into an agency, exposure to a lot of different things, a lot of different disciplines, got to do a lot of things. And I realized that I didn't like doing those things. And here's what I really like to do. And I was able to focus that way. I'd say, continue to learn. I've been back to school 10 times.
Really?
And sometimes for certificate degrees, sometimes just for classes, because things are changing and you got to kind of keep up on what's going on. There's a lot of courses now you can buy. Mm-hmm. I just downloaded a course actually from Fiverr. It was like a 10-part course, cost me $50. I mean, it's actually really good.
Yeah.
And so it's a good way to stay fresh on things that are going on and trends that are going on. I can't speak for you, but for me, I'm inundated every day with educational material and articles and reports. And a lot of them I'll sit and I'll save and then I'll read later. Some I just throw away. But so there is not to assume that you know everything, but that constant education and learning and talking to people and taking advantage. You can find a mentor that's, you know, willing to help you along and, you know, kind of be that person you bounce stuff off of. Because ultimately you don't know what you don't know. The path that you start today may not be the path that you're on, you know, 10 years from now. So, you know, you have to learn that skill set and understanding you're going to be client facing, or you're not be client facing, or you're going to be more on the tech side. You know, do you have that skill set? Do you need to learn that skill set?
Yeah. It's the constant learning and the recently, as I've talked to people, is realizing the mentorship, but it's actually easier than people realize. If you're polite and respectful about it, you could reach out to like a C-suite and be like, hey, I appreciate you. I like to pick your brain for like 30 minutes. My lunches and coffee's on me. We just talk about you and tips and tricks.
Yeah.
People don't realize. They'll be like, great, I get free lunch. Like, absolutely. How much would you want to pick for my brain kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's great. I'm a mentor at some of the universities and some of the startup organizations where, you know, I go and I listen to pitches and these young entrepreneurs trying to get their businesses off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, some of them call me and say, hey, can we have a one-on-one with you? And yeah, of course, you know, I got some cool little toys up here. I got from helping a new toy company last year.
Nice.
Yeah. So they're pretty cool. I like them a lot. So they're sitting right here on my shelf and so, you know, people are willing to help. I mean, and I think I did, you know, probably 6 or 7 companies last year where they just called me and talked to me and, you know, asked for some advice and, you know, I like doing it. That's what somebody did for me many years ago. And they told me one day you'll have an opportunity to play it forward. And that's what I do.
It really is if you truly are humble and learn from a good mentor and you pay it forward, you don't look at it as an expense. You just look at it as now I'm going to hand the torch to them and they do it in the future too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, we all have a lot of knowledge that we've accumulated over the years and you know, you can help somebody out, keep them on the straight and narrow and it you know, it's great.
It really is. Well, Angelo, that was wonderful. I'd like to cut it there. Where can people reach out to you, your website, your podcast, et cetera?
Sure. So my website is theponzigroup.com, PONZIGROUP.com, theponzigroup.com. My podcast is actually on my website, but the podcast is called Business Growth Cafe. You can find me, and I have a website for that very specifically, or frankly, I'm on any podcast platform. I'm on Apple, Google. I'm actually on Pandora, Spotify. I'm on Amazon. I mean, you can pretty much find me anywhere. And then certainly on LinkedIn. And I'm always open to connecting with people.
Awesome. And I'll make sure his links are in the description. Thank you again. And I'd love to get you on in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. I enjoy sitting on this side as much as I enjoy sitting on your side.
Yes. Yes, it is fun. All right. Thank you. I appreciate you very much.
All righty. Thank you.
Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? App, if you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome and see you next time.